You got a tie on. What's going on? What's happening?
Doing business. Doing business. Oh, we're back in the office. So,
wow.
So it's office world now. Yeah.
How's it feel? Does it feel good?
Yeah. You know, I've already had some nice, helped win some new business from one of the new partners the other day, uncovered $7 million outside for her. So that was a nice call. A nice meeting with a client. I was up face to face and, you know, he's going to put some money in our strategy and we're going to fund some other strategies also. And, I'm excited to, Tim and I had a conversation with that other advisor we discussed, the older guy that's scared to convert to managed, his name's Bill. And, you know, we're making some inroads there where he's open to exploring how to improve his business and get some more, business done that way. And, starting to get some, you know, starting to pick up some synergies here and there, you know, some other opportunities down the pipe where, you know, Eric's trying to bring on some other advisors. And if we can show success early on, that's going to help, you know, him, you know, hand off more stuff and be more aggressive about getting the rest of us involved in other things. So trying to set a good precedent up front.
Great. Any challenges?
So still not, you know, I had a discussion with Eric this morning and said, you know, with some of these people that we're doing other work with where, you know, we think down the line they could fold in or, you know, I said, I don't want to convert people into my strategies to have to convert them to your strategies in 3 years, you know, like, or, you know, and he committed to me that he was going to put some more thought into the discussion of how we manage / co-manage the different sleeves of money. Because I think originally he was thinking, I do my models for a couple of years and you do his models, continue to, and we'd eventually just merge them. But now he's seeing that, you know, if I'm going to be working with Bill, and I'm putting Bill into our stuff, eventually we're going to have to get it into either Eric's stuff or whatever the new blended version is going to be. So he, you know, and he's like, I don't want you running 8 strategies. I'm like, I agree, but I'm trying to get alignment with your guys' stuff. I don't want to put them into something I know we're going to phase out. So he gave me a commitment that he's going to think a little bit more on that. So hopefully I'll be able to have a situation where I'm running 2 or 3 strategies and he's running 4 or 5 strategies or whatever it is. And then we have a way to, you know, focus on less and help, you know, just keep adding to the pot, so to speak. And we're not competing for business or anything like that.
Right.
So, you know, but he promised me he would, since we're officially a team now and all, and everything has gotten to this point, I think he's feeling a little bit better about doing that. I think he was hesitant to do that before things were consummated somewhat, you know. But I think he's also starting to see that long term, you know, he doesn't want me working on one guy's stuff and having that guy start funding all my strategies and then, you know, we'll have to flip him again. That's not efficient. Plus, I'm like, why am I working on this if we're going to get rid of it? You know, like, just kind of frustrating. But we almost have our marketing approved for all of our strategies. We're waiting for final confirmation. So that's going well.
You say you're officially a team. What does that mean?
We are all businesses running through rep codes that everyone's attached to. So when Larry drops business, 19 people get at least a penny's worth of business.
Okay, Larry, why don't you mute yourself because I'm getting feedback. Thanks. All right, go ahead, Ryan.
It just means that as we generate revenue, the revenue is going through FA numbers that have all parties attached to it. so when I drop it, if I put someone into a one of our managed strategies, then, you know, every one of the teams at least getting 0.1% of that business. So it's official team business to go towards team compensation where we can all get on the same payout grid and everything. And they dissolved both of our teams and recreated a new team with all of us. So in the corporate directory now, instead of us being two teams, we're one team with all of us on it.
Great. Does that mean anything compensation-wise?
Once we hit like 50% T12 or 70% T12, we'll jump from 43% to 53%. Or Larry, I think Larry's at 44, so I think we'll go from 44 to 53.5, or we're going to pick up about 10 percentage points of payout. Most of it's going to be deferred comp, but it's still much higher compensation per dollar. Right. We're getting, you know, 10% on them. You know, Larry's doing about 900. That's an extra 90,000 going directly into deferred comp each year that we wouldn't have otherwise.
Wonderful.
So it's significant pickup on that business.
So what are you going to do with the extra money?
It goes straight to deferred comp. Our paycheck might incrementally go down a little bit up front because we have to contribute 5.5% of our payout to the team operations and so forth. But the total compensation is much greater, but our two paycheck, the firm always keeps that between 36 and 38% regardless of what your production level is. Effectively, just your deferred comp. Our deferred comp is going to go from 5.5% to like 14% or something outrageous.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, I mean, look, you know, it's great for the high earners, which is what this is all targeted to retain, of course. But yeah, so effectively what will happen is every year, you know, we'll all be pouring in roughly, you know, 75 to 100,000 in deferred comp. And then as that vests 4 years and 6 years later, we just, each January, it's just like boom, boom, boom. And you just get these vestings every year they just start coming. So you get the tax deferred growth and you get it taken off your taxes up front, which is nice. But for the smaller producers, it's not really a treat to have so much of your income diverted, you know. Down the line, of course, it's great, but, you know.
When you get to be my age, it's nice. I've used up, this will be my last year of deferred comp, but I've been taking it ever since I retired at 60. So it's 15 years of deferred comp, which is really nice.
Yeah, it is. It's nicer for Larry than it is for Tim. I'm sure Tim's not real fired up about it, but you know, big picture, it'll be great. You know,
right. I mean, if it's properly invested over that period of time, by the time you get to be 60, then it, all of a sudden you've got a, you know, and then even in those 15 years that I took deferred comp, it continued to grow. I mean, that's the part that's crazy. It grew almost staying the same for that period of time, and then they just had to send it out.
Eric told us he had 400,000 hit in January from deferred comp. So it was probably 250 that grew to be 400 over the 5 years, you know, like
right.
Still an outrageous amount of money.
Right. It's wonderful. And then, you know, I don't know how much you get deferred until real deferred comp until retirement, but that's pretty nice too. Anyway, what else? What do you need help on?
Larry, do you want to talk about kind of rebooting a little bit?
Yeah, Ryan and I spoke briefly today, and you know, being that we're all going to be back in the office soon. Ryan's going to be out this week for a little bit, but he'll be back in the office full time next week. And Tim will be in the office as well. And just trying to get back to the basics of Supernova. I was telling him, I think what we should do is basically just put up our poster boards, get our sheets, really kind of concentrate on just the activities of marking ourselves, holding ourselves accountable, as well as trying to really work on the CIO aspect of it. If we can do those things, the stuff we're already doing with clients from home and from the office, but now that we're back in the office, trying to really make sure our activity boards are done appropriately and that we're keeping score, quite frankly, holding ourselves accountable from that aspect. We've been gone for a year. It's kind of like starting anew at this point.
Yeah, will you get your folders back and start working with them again?
Yes.
Yeah, so Rob, I don't know. Like, I've got my folders up here. First thing they got a spot in the drawer. And then we've got our big board here. Our game board.
Yep.
You guys see that? Yeah. So we need to start tracking on that again. We've been soft on that. That's really the only way to say it. We've been soft on that.
How about your pipeline tool? Are you using that?
Are you referring to Tim as a Tim the pipeline tool?
You're calling Tim a tool? You know, he's a big guy. I wouldn't call him a tool.
The best pipeline we've ever used, Ryan.
Rob, we grow big on this team. I think Larry's the runt at 6'2", 230.
Barry's the runt.
Well, he said the team, Larry. Barry's an individual producer. I think we're all using our own version of the pipeline tool. I don't think that we're all on the same page on that, are we? Guys, are you two on the same page on that?
I mean, we sent that sheet around, and so, you know, as I pick up activity, I'm definitely jotting stuff down. I think Larry has been very disciplined with using that pipeline, you know, the conversions, the new business, and things like that. But I was given the responsibility of kind of collecting these and holding people accountable, and I've fallen down on that responsibility just with getting back to the office and getting everything going the last week and a half or 2 weeks. So I got to get back to that.
I've got this going, which has got kind of, you know, I keep track and I'm tracking all this stuff. You know, the yellow is stuff that's expecting to close in the next couple of weeks. And then, you know, we're kind of I'm doing that bit, but I'm not doing it in a highly sophisticated method. It's more of just, I am keeping track of the pipeline, but the pipeline is very much missing large prospects. You know, most of this is just another couple hundred here and there type stuff. You know, that's why we're at 4 million for the year, but it's on 15 things, you know. Brought in one new relationship that's about 1.5 million, and brought in another 700 for an existing client. And then everything else is some 200s, 300s, 400s, you know, and then a whole bunch of, you know, rinky dink guy sends me 75 to add to his account. It adds up, but, you know, not the big hits that they need to be.
Right. My first call today was the guy in Louisville, Kentucky. And he said, he gave me a quick rundown of how he's doing. And he said, best quarter, best month, brought in 20 million. And I go, wow. I said, you brought in 20 million. You know, you brought in, I think, 30 million. We've been raising it from 10 to 20 to 30, but he thinks he can bring in 40 this year. And I said, so what are you doing? He said, Rob, it's all Supernova. I said, what are you talking about? He said, I do a week ahead for every call. I send an agenda. And then the day I have the meeting, I send the executive summary. And my assistant knows the CPA, and I heard this guy selling his business. And this assistant said, he said to his assistant, you think we'll get that referral? And she said, well, who else would she send it to? Would he send it to? He called the guy and he said, of course I'll send it to you. You're the only one that treats the clients the way you do. Okay. So all I'm saying is double check and make sure you're doing the fundamentals as well as he is. Okay. At the bottom.
We don't need to double check. We're not. And that's the next step in it, where we have not been sending out the folders for the last year. You know, we've not been sending out an agenda beforehand and sending an executive summary afterwards. Like, we're not doing those refined next level professional activities. They're not happening. At least not for me. I'd say Larry probably had 5 agendas in the last year, you know, or, you know, it's like special occasion as opposed to the norm. And that's what we need to, you know, move from doing light to doing what we need to be doing. And, you know, as we lower our headcount, that should become easier and easier. But I think, and I understand that all excuses are just excuses. I understand that. But I'm saying from our side of the fence, you know, we need to either have us pick up the slack and work on agendas or stuff, because I'm not sure how much more bandwidth Christine has. She's handling about 70% more business than the average CSA in our firm is. And she's kind of running bell to bell. You know, she sits right in front of Larry and I, and she's not filing her nails. You know what I mean? So I think that we're going to have to step up to make that happen a little bit more. And, even if it's an oversimplified version with 3 bullet points, I think it's better than nothing. And I think that we've been letting perfection stop us. If we can't do it perfect, we don't do it, as opposed to just, you know, doing it and then refining it along the way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, just think, if you can have your schedule set up a week in advance and the agenda goes out, you know, with a copy of any enclosure, if you're going to discuss mortgages or whatever, and then the day of the call, you pick up the phone, you got the agenda, you go through it. If there's things that you're supposed to do and they're supposed to do, that goes on to the executive summary, and then that executive summary becomes part of the agenda for the next call. Okay. I'm just telling you, Ryan, I'm telling you what he told me. He told me, Rob, I wouldn't have this business. I said, so how did you get that business? He said, Supernova. I said, you're telling me without Supernova, you don't think you'd have got it? He said, no, I wouldn't have gotten it.
What were you saying about the executive agenda goes on the next call?
Well, the executive summary is what you use to make your next agenda for the next call, of course.
Oh, right.
You see, it's like the minutes from the last board meeting. You go through the minutes to determine what anything that's going to go on the new agenda for the next board meeting, right?
Right.
You know, when I do a board meeting, my agenda is pretty simple. You know, it's not complicated. It's just what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. You know, so if you've got specific things you're following up on, they go on the agenda. If you don't, then it's just a standard agenda.
Ryan, I like the idea of just using something simple, even if it's that 2 or 3 prong approach. Clients will understand it. We'll understand it. We'll be able to add more and to be more sophisticated. But once again, bullet points, it's not perfect, but it directly gets us moving in the right direction.
Yeah, like when I did the meeting with Julie and Eric last week, she had a kind of an agenda sheet that had everyone's picture at the top of it, like the team photo. And then it said, you know, meeting with Steve this date. And then it had like 3 bullet points. It was like, you know, go over sale of building, you know, discuss outside investments and discuss strategies for cash. And that was kind of it. But at least it kept us on track and also gave the client the expectation that we were going to be talking about those things. And embarrassingly, there's been times over the last year where I've had meetings with clients and I've had to go back and ask them what the hell we decided on because I couldn't find it anywhere in my notes, which is really professional and makes you look like a real champion. Hey, what are we doing? You know? So that's not a good look. That doesn't instill an outrageous amount of confidence when you know I can't even find in my notes what we talked about doing.
Think about it, and you put at the bottom. He asked, by the way, what was it? Was there anything in that check with his compliance director on the executive summary? And they just, all he said was, if there's something that should be included in this executive summary that you either disagree with or we left out, please add it. Okay. And what that does from a compliance point of view, it eliminates any I say, you say, any conflict in terms of what we agreed to. It just protects you guys. It's a gold mine. It's a life insurance. It's a business insurance policy.
Yeah, and that's the best practice that we're utilizing from the new team is they actually have the clients sign off on their financial plan that says, hey, we're targeting 6% per year or 5% per year or 7% per year. That way, when the client comes back and says, you know, the market was up 30, why am I only up 27? They say, look, you know, this is what you wanted from us, so to speak. And it insulates them a little bit more by having, you know, from their standpoint, they're looking to get rid of all fiduciary issues. So they're trying to move towards 100% managed with full financial plan backing everything and basically trying to bulletproof this. Through, you know, if we're doing Supernova and we're mostly managed and we're, you know, we have clients signing off that this is what they want, from a legal standpoint, that covers our ass. That doesn't mean a client can't fire us, but if we're making 25% when the market's up 35, you know, they can't sue us for that. If we walk in and say, look, this client said they wanted a model 3 out of 5 risk. They're up 20 out of 30, which is, you know, 2/3 exactly where we thought we'd be. You know, like, what are they going to say? You know what I mean? Like, this is what they're doing.
Right.
And I think that's a very wise thing that they do on their side of the fence that we should look to adopt, which also gets easier the fewer clients you have. And, you know, ultimately what it's coming down to for me is I'm realizing, you know, I don't have enough time to do all the steps that you should be doing for your clients. Like, not all of my clients that are doing backdoor Roth IRAs that should be doing backdoor Roth IRAs. And I'm embarrassed as their advisor to admit that, you know, that I'm not going that extra mile for people. And there's probably people that have gaps in their insurance. And there's probably clients that have gaps in their estate planning process that I've been too distracted and or lazy to find, you know, one of the two. And that's what's really getting me to shift my mindset and really upsetting me at the same time. You know, like I'm upset with myself for not doing, you know, 100% job. I'm doing a 70% job or an 80% job. And I'm probably doing a better job for my clients than most people are getting from their advisors, you know? Yeah. So I'm aware of that, but
Ryan,
still leave me able.
Part of that is now with the team, we have Julie to help with the estate stuff and to only work on that piece. And we have other people that can help put together or pick apart the pieces that aren't 100%. I understand what you're saying, but once again, that's part of this process as well.
All right, so.
Well, Julie, they're gonna help bring us ideas, but they're not gonna do the work with our clients for us. We have to own that. You know, they're gonna bring us ideas that we may not have thought of, but she's not going to sit down with every one of your clients and do financial planning sessions for them for fun, you know, so that's where we have to step up.
But she's a resource for us for the handful of clients that we want her to be.
Sure.
Anyway, my suggestion is getting back into the office, you know, Monday is our game board pipeline meeting. And everybody reports in on how they're doing on their pipeline. And I mean, I just think it's a look, if you're running a business, it isn't a hobby or a charity or, I mean, you're running a business. So Monday is freaking show up. What have you done? You know, what's your pipeline look like? And how did you move the pipeline forward this week? You know, who did you add to it? What action did you get going? And then Friday is scoreboard. How did we score? You know, where are we in assets? This is where everybody is. This is our production. This is our assets. This is our money under management. This is everything that we want to track that's important comes out on the game board. Now you can do the whole thing with the director of planning, implementation, brand management, marketing, but at least for God's sakes, hold yourselves accountable for results on Friday and prospecting on Monday, because otherwise, guys, you're just like anybody else that's flopping around out there not doing squat. And that's 95% of our industry. And 5% are in the Barron's 50, you know? And that's where you want to be. But you're not going to get there unless you act like it.
I know that we should be doing all the things, but do you suggest, like, from our side of the fence, doing the Monday and Friday meeting should be step one, and then I think Larry and I, and probably Barry and Tim also, you know, developing our COIs to the higher degree and getting on the boards and stuff is also needs to be front of mind, so to speak. I spent about 3 hours last weekend going through a couple of the different charity directories in our area, like looking at all the different ones that are based between Miami and Boca Raton and trying to, or West Palm Beach, and trying to figure out which ones to do. And something you said kind of like has been sticking with me about like the high value targets, you know? So like there's a group called Unico that's like Italian heritage and they're doing a bunch of stuff. But when I looked at the board members, like the CEO was like one of those guys that sings at like Benvenuto restaurants on Fridays. And then like, you know, it was like, you know, it looks like a circus kind of situation. And then I saw some other ones that seemed to be pretty impressive. Like there was like a Hispanic entrepreneurs group, which had, you know, two white guys on it. And one of them was a college professor and one of them was the husband of one of the co-founders. You know, he worked for Honeywell in like national product development. So he had a pretty high end title. You know, I'm honestly having a very, very, very difficult time trying to figure out, you know, where I should be going with this, you know, and like, you know, I talked to my dad and he's nowhere with his charity that we talked about. They're just kind of, they're not getting it off the ground yet. And, you know, I can support Honor Flight, but like I said, I think, you know, I don't know, you know, if that's how target rich that environment is for business standpoint. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I want to do something that's target rich, but also don't want to sell out and do something that I have no interest in just to be around rich people. You know, so I can't be like, oh, this is the, you know, the feminist LA charity that
Ryan. I did it. I sold out to just be around rich people.
Did you or did you not?
I did.
Okay. So
what about Mary Beth and her music stuff, Ryan? What about Mary Beth and her music?
Yeah, I sent 8 different charities to Mary Beth. There's like Sinfonia of Boca Raton, which is actually headquartered right down the street from my house on Potomac and Military. There's, of course, some big dog ones in Palm Beach, like the Society of the Four Arts and the Palm Beach Chamber Music and the ballet. And, you know, there's Kravitz Center in West Palm. Honestly, I'd rather warm up with something else. I don't want to kind of step into the big leagues right up front. I'd like to get a little bit of, like, I think.
Jump, take a dive, go for it.
Well, you know, Rob, what are your thoughts? I thought we kind of wanted to get a little bit of track record under the belt before we swung at the, Palm Beach Opera, instance.
What's the first one you mentioned?
The Italian American one?
No, the symphony thing.
Oh, it seems to me like it's a Boca symphony, and they did do a donor spotlight on the website. So there's definitely some donors involved that are pretty significant. And in terms of who the players are, I can't always get a roster of who all the players are. Like, it didn't give the board members for that one. It was a little bit more vague, but I don't know. We can always go find out.
Yeah.
It's just, I know.
That was the first one. When you mentioned music, that was the first thing that came out of your mouth.
Yeah. Cause the headquarters is a mile from my door.
Yeah.
I run past that.
Go for that one.
What about the kids' school?
They go to public school.
Yeah, so you want one arts and one charity. So now you got to pick a charity.
Okay. All right.
So there's a charity that has every charity has some occasion, golf tournament, ball, or something to raise money. Okay, you just pick the right charity. Everybody's got sick people in their family. Okay,
right.
Find something that you'd like to fix: diabetes, heart, eyes, cancer. Pick it, and that's your baby.
So you're thinking big, like a big one, like an Alzheimer's Association of America or an American Heart Association.
Local. Just like your local symphony a mile from your door. I want a local charity a mile from your door, but a big brand, big name.
Like we did with Sue Levy for the CPAP.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, a couple people on the team are already involved with like YMCA and some of that stuff. So I'll see what local chapters are available for some of the bigger name ones.
Well, and Courtney's got a full list, Ryan, of where everybody's involved. She has for that.
Yeah.
Maybe,
I've got a list.
Good.
I can email it to you guys. But yeah, that's the next phase, so to speak.
So Rob, quick question about that. How long after you get involved in one of the arts and then one of the charities of your liking, how long do you wait before you start to try to, make it be known that you're a high powered financial advisor at Morgan Stanley? kind of transitioning from, you know, I really care about the symphony and, you know, wanting to help the symphony, and that's why I want to be on the board, and it's all about them. And then it transitions over to, oh, you know, by the way, this is who I am and this is what I do. I mean, how long does that transition or that dance typically take? Or where is it more successful?
Forever. The idea, remember, it's called the giving board or the game board. You give and give and give and give and give until you can't have any more to give. And guess what? Then you get. So a board like that will generally take you 3 to 5 years to develop a real value relationship. My question to you is, how long does it take you to make friends with somebody? And how many close friends do you have in the world?
Right. Typically long, and I don't know, I guess I got more than a few, but yeah, I mean, it's a process, right? Feeling people out and developing the relationship through, you know, shared experience and communication over time.
My question is, how good are you at making friends, and how long does it take you to make a friend?
I would say very good, and dependent on the person. People either love me or hate me on the first stroke, and vice versa. Well,
you want to try and err on the side of love you. Okay? You don't want anyone to hate you. So let's get rid of that idea. Nobody hates you. That's too strong.
True.
And so they like you. It's just some of them take longer to like you. Okay? So what you want to say to yourself is, okay, I'm going to make friends with these people. Therefore, I'm going to go to the meeting. I'm going to meet them, and then I'm going to try and get to know them. Okay. So you can be active in trying to get to know them or passive. I suggest active. So what does that mean? You find out what you have in common, and then you meet and you play golf or you play racquetball or you whatever, pickleball, or you have lunch, or you play chess, or whatever the hell it is that that person likes to do and you like to do. And you make friends outside of the board. So all I'm telling you is the game is to make friends. Once you've made friends and you've taken responsibility, now you're the head of the finance committee. You're the head of the development committee. You're raising money for them. Now you're in a position of authority, and that's when you start to get introductions. You don't get introductions till they respect you and know that you're willing to work. So how long does it take to build trust? That's what you're talking about. The advantage is when you build trust with people of wealth, when they refer you, it's to people of wealth. The problem is when you make friends with people your own age that have no money, it's great, but they don't refer you to people with money because they don't have any. So you've got to kind of project yourself into being a 55-year-old or 60-year-old and act and talk like they talk.
Ryan, you've been doing that. It should be right up your alley.
Right? So you actually, it helps if you're actually interested in it, but if your wife is interested in it, Ryan, then you can be interested in it. I mean, it's not painful. If she's a symphony person, a musician, then she'll love that stuff and she'll love you for taking her. Because they actually listen to that and can hear things that normal people can't, like me. I have no idea what I'm listening to. Just sounds good. Right? But they needed people like me on their board because we helped them raise money and balance sheets and think like business people. And they all think like little artsy people. But they have a lot of money. Oh, you're on mute.
Yes, it's... I'm very excited about those prospects. I mean, my wife is in sales and she's a lot better looking and charming than I am. So that could go a long way towards, you know, especially if I'm, you know, if she's involved as well. I got her to commit to where she said she could be involved.
That's very important.
Let me give you
a little background. Marcia was the one that got the business.
So your wife?
She was the one that everybody approached. My husband needs help. He won't approach Rob because he's an idiot. Would you have him call Rob? Will you have him call Paul, my husband? And Marcia would give her a card, or she would say, Marcia gave out my cards and I picked up business from all these people. They'd never come to me, but they'd all come to Marcia.
That's so true. Nancy passes out more cards. Yes.
It's a team effort.
Yeah.
It works. And if she's a salesman, that's super. You'll know exactly what's going on. So Marcia was in charge of the ball. See, I was the finance guy, I was the money guy, and she was the social person. She was the one in charge of the ball and knew everybody and got everything organized and ran the ball and raised the money, and everybody loved her and they used me to manage money.
And in terms of financially committing, I think you told me, you know, a couple $1,000 goes a long way with most of these places.
Yeah, I would say $5,000 to $10,000 would actually be a good thing. It shows you're a player and you're not a kid.
Same per year, is what you're saying.
Right? Yes.
And you got that 25% match from the firm as well, as long as it's a tax exempt organization. So your $5,000 could turn into $6,000.
Yeah, your $2,500 could be $5,000.
So like with Honor Flight, for instance, when, you know, I told my grandfather I would help support that cause. That's something he cared about a lot. You know, like I gave them on December 7th, I donate like $1,941 for Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th, 1941.
Nice.
So not to sound like a dick, but how do I, you know, in terms of like donating the money is great, but having people know that you're donating the money is also great.
There's always a brochure that tells everybody how much everybody gave.
You're oh, really?
Always. There's a club.
So the board knows when you're on the
board. The board knows exactly.
Okay.
Ryan, the board will typically have, to be on the board, they may have a minimum for you to meet. So every board member expected to do a donation of $500, $1,000, $5,000, help us raise money, be an integral part of this, as well as, you know, good friendship, something as simple as that, or something a lot more elaborate. But they will tell you what they expect.
Yeah, gotcha. I give $10,000 to the golf tournament every year. I'm a sponsor. Now think of, you know, obviously I'm getting nothing out of this, right? But I sponsor for 10 grand every year. That's a commitment I make. And that's fine. You know, I gave 25,000 to start and then I give 10,000 each year.
So you do make a splash. You come on the scene, so to speak.
I did.
Okay.
What happened was I went to a person's house. This is one of the wealthy people in our community, talked about the school, had the principal there and had some mothers and fathers there that were benefiting by the school. And they said, we'd love you to make a donation if you could to the foundation. And so we committed, I think, $5,000 a year for 5 years.
Right.
And that got me an invitation to join the board. And I thought, damn, that isn't much money. How'd I get it? They just needed somebody to run the investment committee. And I showed clearly I had a commitment. And then once I got on, I started to give, you know, I give 10 grand a year. plus, you know, and I had already fulfilled the 25. I figured out how to do that ahead of time. So that's, you know, it's okay. You can make a splash with 5 a year for 5 years. You're going to be on there for 5 years. So that way you're hitting them. You see what I mean? So you hit them hard, but you don't give it to them all at once.
That's a good idea. Give them an upfront commitment. And that puts you on the map, and they know that they know you're going to be a player for a while. You're not just a fly by night.
Well, like Rob said, a lot of these things, particularly with the veteran stuff, they'll do galas or golf tournaments, and you'd be crazy, you know, to not try to sprinkle it throughout the year. You know, I'm going to a big gala in May. Then I'm going to soon start to sponsor from one of my buddies, but. You know, you get your name and firm in a brochure. Maybe you sponsor, a giveaway, a tchotchke giveaway. And that's really where you get that recognition. And as you get the consistency of doing it year after year, it's like your thing. And then maybe you send it, you know, maybe they send emails out because somebody in the group has a special need that they're trying to raise money for. And you send a check to that and kind of break it up over, you know, the course of a year, but to the same charity to stay involved. You know, versus
so just, don't blow your whole wad on the annual donation. You want to be able to drip consistently.
Yeah, because you're going to have to, you want to be a table sponsor at the ball and, you know, you want to be there. You got to show up.
Now, when you're sponsoring, like, you know, like our firm is a pain in the ass with everything. Like if it says Morgan Stanley, it's like an act of Congress. Do you just sponsor a table and be like, this table's sponsored by Rob Knapp? Smiley face, you know, like, I mean, you know, just
or by the family up. You can do of Ryan Ward.
I do the family.
But, I mean, do you think it's important Morgan Stanley or?
Yeah, I think, you know, you just do your homework and get that stuff approved ahead of time and they'll be happy to have the press. Trust me.
And Courtney can now do a lot of that stuff for us also. So we don't have to beat our head.
Right. You got a team now that gets that stuff done. I guarantee you that they're showing up. In the community.
Yeah.
If you're a party to a big team that's successful, they're doing this.
Yeah, they had 6 or 8 people at a gala a month or two ago, you know, where they make a presence and Eric's always asking for who's got any big events coming up because I think the team may, for the right events, I think the team may pony up the money also for sponsorships.
Absolutely. They got a budget. They're putting the budget together. You'll probably be required to put in a budget for this stuff. And then they do it. And you know, it's the dumb thing is the guys that don't take advantage of it. It's like the office. You know, you guys hit your manager for this, right? Hit them up for that. Hit them up for sponsorships. They'll pay. You just have to do it ahead of time. Make sure it's a good cause and then hammer them.
These auction stuff, you know, you can buy paintings or you can buy, you know, signed memorabilia. And again, people know who buys that stuff. So if you ever want to, you know, come off as the, you know, the guy that's donating a lot of money, go, you know, go to a gala, obviously you sponsor a table there. And a lot of them have these silent auctions where they're, you know, they're giving away, not giving away, but you know, like a Tom Brady, you know, signed jersey or what have you. And you literally put your name on the board with the amount of money that you want to potentially buy for, and then they announce the winners kind of towards the end. And you know, it's always the big swinging, you know, dicks that put big money down on those, and that's all you know, you can write that off. It's all a contribution to the organization. A lot of it's donated, but it's a fun way to give money.
I got a 4 o'clock, so I'm gonna have to run, but I think we covered a lot of territory. Some of it's repeated. Okay,
yeah.
So be more like my boy in Kentucky. He said, Rob, tell me something I should do and I'll do it. See, this guy does every single thing I tell him because I think he trusts me. I know you guys trust me, but I think you're kind of an ADD team.
Yeah, definitely a lot of irons in the fire over here, for sure. I just got a desk for the first time in 14 months, so I'm excited about that, you know. I moved my stuff last weekend. Yeah, we're looking for having a little bit more stability. All right, thank you.
Okay, good. Knock them down. Thanks, Rob. Have fun. Thanks, guys. Bye.